Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
McCain is mentally unstable and vindictive and out of control.
Rob Haney and his fellow committee members from the Arizona Republican Party organized a revolt against John McCain that was purely symbolic. It began with a resolution censoring John McCain for quote-unquote dereliction of duty in the Senate. Despite
and do they believe that he's an amnesty guy? Is that the problem?
That, they believe that. There's also his support for campaign finance reform, which the right really opposes because it restricts the activities of a lot of their grassroots groups.
Mm-hmm.
And his support for gun control. And they also find him to be just generally unhelpful because he takes supposedly maverick positions publicly in the media, then will reverse course. So they, Rob Haney says, you know, John McCain calls it the Straight Talk Express. Down here we call it the Fork Tongue Express.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Lines open if you'd like to talk with me and Max Blumenthal. 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. And up first, Barbara in Phoenix joins us. Hello, Barbara. You're on the air.
Hi. I just want to say, first of all, that there's a recall going on against John McCain, and you can pick up your recall signature form. We were trying to get some signatures to recall.
Mm-hmm.
Under the state law, we can do that. And they're at the radio station at
KPHX.
KPHX.
That's right.
You.
Our friend Leonard Clark helped launch that effort.
And I also, a lot of libertarians voted for McCain. And they should be very upset because, and there's a lot of libertarians in the state, because he's really betrayed them as well.
Let's get a comment from Max. Go ahead, Max.
Well, I think the recall is a good thing because he's not, whether it succeeds or not, for Arizonans, whether you're Republican or whether you're conservative or liberal, he's John McCain's not exactly representing his constituents. He's representing the Chamber of Commerce in Arizona, and he's representing what he perceives the Republican primary voting base to be. In the course of doing that, he said that he wants a dialogue with James Dobson.
A lot of us in the secular world are not aware of the influence of James Dobson. That guy's on like 3,000 radio stations across the country every day.
The largest radio host and the most popular radio host in America.
Yeah. And he has an influence, and it's not just about the Bible. He uses that platform to motivate people in political ways. Go ahead, Barbara.
He has that dating thing. Isn't that his dating where you can find a match?
He has a vested interest in eHarmony.com.
Oh,
yeah, right.
Okay.
And they rejected me. They did. I filled it out. I didn't know who they were. And I filled it out, and I don't know if it was because I was over 50 or because I was Jewish.
Thanks, Barbara.
Thank you. I'm sorry,
but that's a badge of honor.
I don't know why they rejected her, but they do reject you if you're homosexual. You're not allowed to register.
What if you're a former homosexual like Ted Haggard?
Oh, well, you'll probably find a wife pretty quick there.
Welcome to the Free Speech Zone on the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your humble host, Peter B., inviting your calls, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Any topic, any viewpoint, from anywhere within the sound of my voice.
Presidential election, our planned distraction, to divert attention from the action behind the scenes.
So I guess the 2008 campaign season is now in full swing. That's the earliest I've ever seen. But hey, with climate change, we got cherry blossoms and daffodils up about a month early here in California right now, so I guess it's par for the course. Well, there's been an exchange between the camps of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton over the past 48 hours. And one listener, Ruth, emailed and said she thinks this is a trivial thing. And I disagree with Ruth on this. I think it's quite telling. And I think it's worth talking about because David Geffen's comments were strong. They were critical. But in my view, they are well within bounds. And if Hillary Clinton is so thin-skinned that they've got to go ballistic, go nuclear, over remarks of a former supporter, and then claim somehow that Obama has the responsibility to shut him up and return the money? Deborah in Phoenix, thanks for holding. You're next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Peter B.
Hi, Deborah.
I'm afraid my instincts about her were right. She just is too calculating. She was silent too long. When you compare her to a Russ Feingold, I mean, there is no comparison.
Yeah.
And
or
if she
even,
were a
you know,
leader, she would have spoken up on so many important issues long ago.
Deborah, let's be generous. Let's compare her to a moderate Democrat, like John Edwards.
Yeah.
A guy who has said clearly, I was wrong, I regret my vote. And
right.
She, you know, she was in the same boat with him in October of 2002. He, of course, was angling to run for president at that time, and one could say that his vote was even more calculating than hers at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a while back, and I'm willing to let bygones be bygones if people learn from those mistakes. And Edwards is clearly repentant and wants to make amends for what he did. She is not, and you know, she's trying to camouflage her previous failures by positioning herself as the one who really wants to get the troops out now. And, of course, you know, she didn't support Feingold's censure of Bush over the NSA spying program. She didn't support John Kerry's relatively courageous stand last June and July when he introduced legislation to withdraw American troops by a date certain. She's really late to this party, and she's trying to act like she's the one who sent out the invitations. Roman in Mesa, you're next. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Listen, I just wanted to tell you, I really don't care about what's going on between the two media candidates in the Democratic Party. However, one of the things that does concern me is that all of the Democratic candidates were in Carson City except Barack Obama. And, you know, if you can't be there for a union event, that creates some concern for me.
Really?
The real working people had their candidates there. So as a labor leader, I definitely take issue with your perception of it, because to me, the people who come to the working people are the people who ought to lead this country.
If this were next year and the campaign was in full force, I could see your remark. But, you know, these are preliminaries. We haven't even had spring training yet. And many of those 10 or 11 people who were on the stage yesterday won't be around next year for the primaries.
Okay.
So... let's talk again. Thank you, Roman. It's the Peter B. Collins Show, and we dispatched our in-depth undercover low-budget investigative reporter to Corpus Christi, Texas, to look into the vice president's weekend hunting trip with the friendly fire bonus. Tommy Panic, what do you got for us, Tommy?
Hello, Peter. Very nice day. Very nice day turning into night. Here I am live from Corpus Christi, Texas. What is that? I am I'm actually trespassing currently on the grounds of the Armstrong Family Ranch. You're right, it's the Armstrong Family Ranch. Ann Armstrong was actually a Halliburton director when that corporation hired the VP.
Right.
So, yeah, he gets to use her ranch whenever he wants. She gets to live in his underground bunker when all hell breaks loose. So let me start by saying I can't find any truth to the rumors that the vice president was intentionally hunting human. There are no Hurricane Katrina evacuees here. But on Saturday, the VP from Wyoming, that's the land where gun control is a steady hand, Sherry Whittington, as you've reported, the former commissioner of the Texas Funeral Service Commission,
right,
appointed by the president when he was the governor. Anyway, this guy is out of intensive care, and really quite fortunate that the vice president had gone back to the shotgun. He had previously been firing an RPG launcher. He used a plasma cannon, a Gatling gun, even some stuff that's top secret. But this Armstrong woman who owns the ranch called the shooting victim bruised more than bloodied, and that his pride was more than anything else. I actually once spent a month in ICU because of a wounded pride. It is fortunate for this guy that while most Americans don't have health care, he was shot by Deadeye Dick, who travels with his own doctor and ambulance. And by the way, the White House prefers to call it sprinkled, not shot. But maybe focused a little more on the kill than the hunt. The VP, who as we all know, usually finds someone else to do his dirty work with elk hunting. This is driving around in a car and shooting stuff. It's basically perpetrating a drive-by and something totally frowned upon in the hunting community. But I think of particular interest was why the White House didn't release this info for nearly 24 hours.
Exactly.
Kind of baffling. You're talking about it quite a bit. But they apparently thought the Department of Homeland Security would respond, who thought FEMA would respond, who thought the Center for Faith and Fairness would respond. Nobody knew what to do here. And I did hear that the VP, who may try to claim this as combat experience of his own, had considered a New Year's resolution in which he'd stop telling people to go F themselves and simply shoot them. It's just far more therapeutic, and I actually must sign off now. I've got a lead on another farm. It's not the King Farm, which is adjacent to the Armstrong Farm, or the ranch, I should say, but another farm the VP likes to hunt at. It is reportedly stocked with illegal immigrants in Scooter Libby. But, yeah, I see a man, actually. No, wait a minute. Oh, that's a woman in khakis, Timberlands, and a rifle. Oh, my God, that's Liz in her comfy shoes.
That's our Panic Report for today. Chock full of facts. Thank you, Tommy Panic. And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on like a cannonball. That's the name of this tune, our music of the moment by Supertramp. From an album called Brother, Where You Bound. It's 33 minutes after the hour, and special attention to our listeners in Phoenix, Arizona. Max Blumenthal joins us right now. He writes for The Nation and publishes at Huffington Post and blogs at maxblumenthal.com. Welcome back to the show, Max.
Yeah, great to be back, Peter.
Nice to talk with you. I want to give you credit because I first read about John McCain's rejection by Arizona Republicans in The Nation. And then I saw a story in the New York Times that followed, for me, about 24 hours later. I'm sure you wrote it long before the Times got around to it.
I actually emailed my story to some friends at the Times, and they wrote that story, and as usual, did me the favor of not citing me.
Uh-huh.
But you know, it's always good to get the word out.
Do you have a lifelong quest to keep your name out of the New York Times?
I'd love to have my name in there, but they seem to be treating me like persona non grata or something. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that's their style. You know, they take a lot from independent. Not to digress too much from what we're going to talk about, but the New York Times, they take a lot from independent media and take a lot of credit for what we're reporting. And so I look at it as a testament to the success of independent media.
Well, let's digress no further. Max Blumenthal is with us, and I direct you to the Huffington Post or to his blog, maxblumenthal.com, or even thenation.com, or pick up the paper copy of the magazine. But tell us about Rob Haney, Arizona Republican State Committee man, who you quote here, McCain is mentally unstable and vindictive and out of control.
Well, if it wasn't for John McCain's apparent vindictiveness, we would have never heard of Rob Haney. And why should we care about Rob Haney? He's a 65-year-old IBM retired middle manager who holds a position, a low-level position in the Arizona Republican Party as a state committee man. But in 2005, after John McCain had come out against anti-immigrant legislation in Arizona, inflaming the Republican base in Arizona, Rob Haney and his fellow committee members from the Arizona Republican Party, organized a revolt against John McCain that was purely symbolic. It began with a resolution censoring John McCain for quote-unquote dereliction of duty in the Senate, failing to represent the sentiments of the people who had kept him in power. John McCain took this very personally. First, he sent his chief of staff and the chief of staff of John Kyle, the other Republican senator from Arizona, to a meeting of the GOP committee members in Maricopa County, which is right outside Phoenix, the largest county in Arizona, begging them not and threatening them not to pass this resolution. They passed it anyway, almost unanimously.
Mm-hmm. And do they believe that he's an amnesty guy? Is that the problem?
that, they believe that. There's also his support for campaign finance reform, which the right really opposes because it restricts for the activities of a lot of their grassroots groups.
Mm-hmm.
And his support for gun control, and they also find him to be just generally unhelpful because he takes supposedly maverick positions publicly in the media, then will reverse course. So they, Rob Haney says, you know, John McCain calls it the Straight Talk Express. Down here we call it the Forked Tongue Express.
Mm-hmm.
So John McCain, in revenge for this purely symbolic resolution, as revenge, ran an entire slate of candidates to take out all of the incumbent state committee members in the Republican Party in Arizona who had criticized him or voted for the resolution. He even coaxed his old friend, Fike Symington, the former governor of Arizona, out of retirement to run for this low-level state precinct-level position. And John McCain, he took it so personally that he threw his own hat into the race. So, in the end, despite heavy funding and, you know, total name recognition, these guys were destroyed. His entire slate of candidates was wiped off the map, defeated. So John McCain essentially threw, you know, he confirming his reputation for being vindictive, created some sense of concern about how he would handle a real political crisis if he were president, considering the way he reacted to this symbolic low-level rebuke of his leadership.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very interesting because this occurred last fall, right?
This happened last fall, and then recently this year, John McCain had supported a woman named Lisa James, a Republican consultant, for the race for the chairperson of the GOP, which is a relatively high profile race in Arizona, especially because John McCain needs to get his ground game on point in Arizona in advance of the presidential primaries, because Mitt Romney has a really good ground game in Arizona too, and it's not guaranteed that he's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
Lisa James was defeated by Randy Pullen, another conservative critic of John McCain, who was involved in the campaign to pass this anti-immigration legislation that McCain opposed. So McCain suffered another defeat, which actually may have real political ramifications when the campaign rolls around.
Now, it took your efforts to really get this story broken on a national level. I'm sure that the local papers and maybe the TV stations covered it in Phoenix. But do you believe that his Teflon, the relationship he has with the National Press Corps, kind of protects him from critical coverage on stories like this?
Well, he's referred to the media kind of half-jokingly as his base. And they do confer a really fawning coverage on him, in part because he has this maverick image, which I don't think is very well-deserved.
Amen.
What are you saying amen to?
I'm saying that he doesn't deserve a moderate image.
He has a moderate image. And you know, what is a moderate Republican, really? And who is a moderate Republican? These are the people who maybe complained about Samuel Alito, complained about the Military Commissions Act, and in the end, they always vote for it, every time. Even Arlen Specter votes, who's probably one of the most quote-unquote moderate Republicans. He voted Alito and Roberts out of committee.
Mm-hmm.
So he
voted for the Military Commissions Act, saying that he believes it's unconstitutional and just hopes the court will overturn it.
Right, and it's especially egregious in McCain's case, since he personally endured torture, and
mm-hmm.
now he's contributed and essentially put his stamp of approval on the institutionalization of torture as American policy.
Now, Max Blumenthal, I want to talk about the curious relationship between McCain, his presidential campaign, and the White House, because he has recruited virtually every major player available from the Bush team except for Karl Rove. He's got the Swift Boat guy. He's got the Harold Ford Call Me commercial guy. The fundraisers are there. I mean, he has picked up as much of the Bush-Cheney infrastructure as he possibly can. And we have Dick Cheney sniping back at him from Japan and belittling him, saying that he said some nasty things about me, and then, you know, he saw me and ran over to apologize. Maybe he'll apologize to Rumsfeld, too. I mean, that suggests bad blood that is not going to survive the intervening 18 months here.
Well, I mean, the question is, will Dick Cheney survive the 18 months here? But that's another, that's bad blood, literally. We could read this as a calculated political strategy on the part of the Bush team and John McCain, because any candidate who's going to win the Republican nomination is going to need some distance from Bush, and it's going to need to be seen as somewhat adversarial to the Bush administration. I mean, Dick Cheney's popularity is in the 20s, so I think McCain could benefit from this. At the same time, I don't think it's very calculated. I think the Republicans are imploding, and John McCain's veneer is wearing off. He's trailing in the polls to Giuliani in New Hampshire, and I think that has a lot to do with the fact that he's linked himself to Bush out of principle, because he genuinely believes in the mission in Iraq. He genuinely believes in the surge, and he's been this way throughout his whole career. He's been an extreme hawk who is he's not neoconservative, but he believes in these extreme rollback policies. And now he's starting to pay the price, because the Republican base, I think, wants out of Iraq, and they want to embrace a more isolationist, even nativist policy at home that's closer to some of the things you see Lou Dobbs advocating on CNN.
Mm-hmm. But what's the calculation there? How does he believe that his over-the-top embrace of the surge is going to serve him down the road? Can't he see the public opinion, even among Republicans in this country?
Well, I really do think John McCain is acting on principle there, and when he wrapped himself around Bush in 2004, it had to do with the war. I've heard stories from sources, Republican sources I have, from inside the White House, but John McCain will appear either on large screen TVs or by Bush's side inside the White House to offer encouragement for his policies before the Joint Chiefs of the Pentagon. This is not just purely for political consumption what John McCain is doing. Mm. He believes in this, and he is, for a long time, he's been the head of a little-known group called the International Republican Institute, which has taken taxpayer money and used it to overthrow regimes through covert methods throughout the world. It's supposedly a pro-democracy group, but what they're doing is they've overthrown countless regimes in Eastern Europe. They helped engineer the coup against Jean-Bertrand Aristide, mm-hmm. which I covered for Salon.com. And John McCain believes in regime change through soft or hard power to advance these sort of mythical principles of American liberty,
mm-hmm.
and he's right now paying the price for that. Just look back at his speech at the Republican National Convention, which I witnessed. I was actually sitting in the back row at the Republican National Convention in 2004 with a lot of the consultants and the grassroots activists away from the delegates, and they were heckling John McCain as he went on about freedom. He said something about spreading love to Iraq.
Hmm.
It sounded like a hippie.
Wow.
And Max were saying, go back to Arizona.
We got to take a break. We'll continue with Max Blumenthal. Go to his blog, maxblumenthal.com, or read him at thenation.com or huffingtonpost.com. And we'll go to the phones in the next segment. If you have a question or comment, join us toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. I'm your humble host, Peter B. Collins. You're listening to KRXA 540. Continue. continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Lines open if you'd like to talk with me and Max Blumenthal. 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. And up first, Barbara in Phoenix joins us. Hello, Barbara. You're on the air.
Hi. I just want to say, first of all, that there's a recall going on against John McCain, and you can pick up your recall signature form. We were trying to get some signatures to recall.
Mm-hmm.
Under the state law, we can do that. And they're at the radio station at
KPHX.
KPHX.
That's
Thank
right.
You.
Our friend Leonard Clark helped launch that effort.
And I also, a lot of libertarians voted for him and for McCain, and they should be very upset because, and there's a lot of libertarians in the state, because he's really betrayed them as well. His stance on abortion changing and you know, civil rights and so on and so forth. Libertarians are definitely stay out of my business type of folks.
Well, and just to tag on to that, Max reports in his blog that McCain either is scheduled to or has given a speech in Seattle at the Discovery Institute, and their two key focuses are on intelligent design, and that really was the headquarters for the Terry Schiavo campaign.
Right. Well, and, I mean, he's completely, you know, sold out to the Christian right. I don't understand completely why. I mean, it's almost bizarre. It's like they put a chip in his head or something, and suddenly he went from the somewhat moderate Republican libertarian-y
It is bizarre, but if you look at the route a Republican has to take to the White House, it includes stops in, you know, at Bob Jones University, the Discovery Institute, and also at Jerry Falwell's place. Max?
Well, we're trying to recall him, so let's...
Hold on, Barbara. Let's get a comment from Max. Go ahead, Max.
Sorry.
Well, I think the recall is a good thing because he's not... whether it succeeds or not, for Arizonans, whether you're Republican or whether you're conservative or liberal, John McCain's not exactly representing his constituents. He's representing the Chamber of Commerce in Arizona, and he's representing what he perceives the Republican primary voting base to be. At the same time, you know, in the course of doing that, he's said that he wants a dialogue with James Dobson. You know, if you're libertarian and you're genuinely libertarian, which means that you're not only for eliminating the federal government, you're also for preventing the federal government from implementing authoritarian measures to infiltrate your private life, then
right.
You will oppose everything James Dobson stands for, because there could be no more insidiously authoritarian figure in America than James Dobson, who even wants the government to mandate how you discipline your children. I mean,
mm-hmm. Well, McCain went to the Religious Broadcasters Convention within the past week and gave a speech talking about his faith. And, you know, he really does seem to believe that that is a route. A lot of us in the secular world are not aware of the influence of James Dobson. That guy's on like 3,000 radio stations across the country every day.
The largest radio host and the most popular radio host in America.
Yeah. And he has an influence, and it's not just about the Bible. He uses that platform to motivate people in political ways. Go ahead, Barbara.
He has that dating thing. Isn't that his dating where you can find a match?
He actually, I'm not sure if I'm getting this right, but he used to control some. He has a vested interest in eHarmony.com.
Oh, okay.
Right, and they rejected me. They did. I filled it out. I didn't know who they were, and I filled it out, and I don't know if it was because I was over 50 or because I was Jewish.
Thanks, Barbara.
Thank you. I'm sorry,
but that's a badge of honor.
I don't know why they rejected her, but they do reject you if you're homosexual. You're not allowed to register.
What if you're a former homosexual like Ted Haggard?
Oh, well, you'll probably find a wife pretty quick there.
Dave, Eureka, join us.
Yeah, I've got to say simply that I think the election of John McCain would represent no progress now whatsoever for this country. I think that he's ingratiated himself in every way that he can with a very corrupt bureaucracy there. I'm thinking the only way it makes sense that he would take that route I've got to say simply that...
Like Ted Haggard.
...of John McCain would represent no progress now whatsoever for this country. I think that he's ingratiated himself. I've got to say simply that I think the election of John McCain would represent no progress now whatsoever for this country. I think that he's ingratiated himself in every way that he can with a very corrupt theocracy, bureaucracy there. I'm thinking the only way it makes sense that he would take that route is that he's hoping that whoever controls the voting machines will be smiling on him come election day.
Good point, Dave. Thank you very much. Go ahead, Max.
Of the corruption of John McCain, just to introduce a really interesting fact about McCain that I don't think has generated enough attention. McCain said that he wanted a dialogue with Dobson. Dobson had been agitating against a specific measure in John McCain's series of campaign finance reform bills that would have required groups like Focus on the Family, James Dobson's group, and other nonprofits to disclose who their donors are on their IRS forms. John McCain wound up voting against this measure that he wrote because of James Dobson's opposition to it.
Wow.
Talk about corruption. The guy's voting against himself now.
Jake Arcata, you're next.
Hey, Peter. You know, in the 2000 Republican primary, we all remember how the Bush campaign just attacked John McCain and his family personally and without mercy. But John McCain, not caring about the racist attacks against his child or the attacks against his wife for her drug abuse and mental illness, he decided to suck up to Bush for the last 7 years. In fact, he was the guy who was promoting the escalation of the war. But now we look at the polls, and John McCain has fallen in the polls, and he's behind a pro-gun control, pro-choice, pro-gay rights Republican by the name of Rudy Giuliani, who's on his third marriage. That's really got to burn McCain to be behind Giuliani.
Well put, Jake. A comment, Max?
Well put.
Okay.
If you're pro-family, you generally stand up for your family.
Let's squeeze in one more. It's Matt in Mesa. Thanks for your call, Matt.
Hi, guys. I had a quick question for your guest in regards to Ron Paul. I think as a more Democratic-leaning constituent of a Republican, Ron Paul seems to be a prime candidate. He's a constitutionalist. He's a veteran. He's been in Congress for 20 years, so he knows policy.
All right, I'm tight for time here. Max, do you have a quick comment?
Well, we could do an entire show on Ron Paul, who has no name recognition, has been tied to the Patriot Militia movement, and at the same time is in favor of some policies I agree with. He's the closest to the independent populism that Lou Dobbs advocates, except a little bit more fringe.
Max, we're out of time. Thanks for joining us. Pleasure to talk to you again.
Out of me, yeah.
Read all about it at thenation.com, Huffington Post, or maxblumenthal.com. I'm Peter B. Collins. Welcome to the Free Speech Zone on the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your humble host, Peter B., inviting your calls, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372, any topic, any viewpoint, from anywhere within the sound of my voice.
Presidential election, our planned distraction, to divert attention from the action behind the scenes. Like a game of chess when the house is a mess, or a petty money squabble when your marriage is in trouble, or a football game when there's rioting in the street. It's just another movie, another song and dance, another poor sucker who never had a chance.
So I guess the 2008 campaign season is now in full swing. That's the earliest I've ever seen. But hey, with climate change, we got cherry blossoms and daffodils up about a month early here in California right now, so I guess it's par for the course. Well, there's been an exchange between the camps of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton over the past 48 hours. And one listener, Ruth, emailed and said she thinks this is a trivial thing. And I disagree with Ruth on this. I think it's quite telling. And I think it's worth talking about because what happened, in case you haven't been up to speed on this, David Geffen, who is a Hollywood mega millionaire, used to run Geffen Records, and, you know, he's a movie mogul, and he's an out gay and a big supporter of Democratic causes. He raised $18 million for Bill Clinton as president, and at some point, he got off the Clinton bus. It appears to be around the Lewinsky impeachment phase. And so this week, Geffen gathered his friends in Hollywood, raised over $1 million in one night for Barack Obama. And he gave an interview to Maureen Dowd of the New York Times, in which he was highly critical of Hillary Clinton, who he described as incredibly ambitious, and he slammed both of the Clintons for what he said their ability to lie easily. And there were some other comments in there, too. This started a crossfire because the following morning, or yesterday morning, just shortly after people had gotten through breakfast and their New York Times, the Clinton campaign fired back. And they demanded that Barack Obama repudiate the remarks of his supporter, David Geffen, and return all of the money that was raised at that fundraiser. Now, this salvo came from Howard Wolfson, who is the mouthpiece and a real, real tough guy, a fighter, for Senator Clinton. He appeared last night on the Hardball Show, if you had a chance to see it. And it was really offensive. It really was. Because Wolfson tries to be the gutter fighter, and Senator Clinton tries to rise above it. She was at a forum in Carson City, Nevada, yesterday, with virtually all of the Democratic candidates except for Barack Obama. And the only comment she really made was that she doesn't believe in the politics of personal destruction. Here's the quote. She said, candidates and their allies should not be engaging in the politics of personal destruction. Now, David Geffen's comments were strong. They were critical. But in my view, they are well within bounds. And if Hillary Clinton is so thin-skinned that they've got to go ballistic, go nuclear, over remarks of a former supporter, and then claim somehow that Obama has the responsibility to shut him up and return the money, I'm sorry. It's way off base. And Steve Pizzo, who blogs on the web at newsforreal.com, posted a powerful piece today, and I'm going to read part of it to you. Please, please, please don't do this to us. Please, he wrote. Do 40% of Democrats really want Hillary? Really? That's the question I ask myself each time I see polls that say Hillary Clinton is the choice of 40% of Dems. He says, what the hell's wrong with you people? Are you the Democratic Party's version of the GOP's red state morons, the ones who put George W. Bush in the Oval Office twice? Because by supporting Hillary, you're vying for precisely that sort of infamy. Listen, he writes, and listen well, Hillary zombies. Pay attention, damn it. Hillary Clinton is Tom DeLay on estrogen. And that's neither a sexist remark, Pizzo goes on, or the slightest exaggeration. I'm not talking about her politics. I'm talking about her stone-cold, calculating, triangulating soul. That woman is not worthy of your support. Hillary is just as mean as Tom DeLay, just as self-centered, and even more shameless, and a more principle-free conniver. And as David Geffen told Maureen Dowd, she's a liar. Just like Tom DeLay, Hillary has surrounded herself with advisors, handlers, and sycophantic gophers that can best be described the political equivalent of a mob. Like DeLay's former political mob, Hillary's gang is mean, plays dirty, plays for keeps. You think I'm kidding? Okay, put your mind where your vote is and go to this website. Watch Chris Matthews interview yesterday with Hillary's chief spokesman, Howard Wolfson. I'll wait here till you return. He goes on. Now, is that what you want to replace the Bush presidency with? Is that the kind of slash-and-burn politics we need for another 4 or 8 years? Do you really want to replace Tony Snow's obfuscation and lies with Howard Wolfson's mean-spirited insinuations and transparent connivance? Really? I'll leave the rest of it for you to read at newsforreal.com because I want to get to your phone calls. But I agree with Steve Piso. And the hypocrisy of Hillary saying that, you know, we, the Democrats, shouldn't engage in the politics of personal destruction. Sorry, Hillary, you're either thin-skinned or you're so mean that Steve Piso has you pegged. 888-5-PETER-B. I look forward to hearing from you. And if you're a first-time caller, get on the line now. 888-573-8372. We go to Tristan first in East Lansing, Michigan. Welcome.
Hey, Peter.
How you doing?
Good. I want to talk to you about this Find an Illegal Immigrant Day thing at NYU.
New York University, yeah.
There was a similar event held at the University of Michigan here.
Really?
Titled the Catch an Illegal Immigrant Day. And
Now, that was in Ann Arbor, not in Lansing.
That was in Ann Arbor, but the local chapter of the conservative group that was called the Young Americans for Freedom, they were going to have a similar event, also called Catch an Illegal Immigrant Day, and a Fun with Guns event. And they were roundly criticized by both the school officials and the student government. And just there was a big outcry against them doing these things. And they ended up not doing it. But
Well, Tristan, it's interesting. I'm looking at a blog that's run by the New York Times. It's called The Lead, L-E-D-E. And it reads, this one at NYU today is reminiscent of the white students-only scholarship stunt offered last November by the college Republicans at BU, Boston University. Those seeking the token $250 reward, which was supposed to spark debate about race and ethnicity-based grants, were required to maintain a 3.2 grade point average, submit a photo, and describe what it means to be a Caucasian American today. I mean, that is a thinly veiled stunt that the Klan would use.
Right. See, these events all tell me two things. One is that the Republicans really have trouble disguising their latent racism.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think they're really desperate for membership because they've been trying these provocative things lately.
Huh.
And I mean, every time it gets lots of media coverage. And,
well, all I can say is, and this is pure speculation, and I'm going to admit it up front here, this reeks of the kind of stunts that David Horowitz and his other right-wing cronies have pulled on campuses over the last few years, trying to stir up support for conservative causes by bashing alleged liberal influence on the academic world.
Just pretty pathetic. They're certainly not going to convince anyone with these demonstrations that they've been doing. The Young Americans for Freedom on my campus started to do some odd things, like they were going for the Catch an Illegal Immigrant Day event. Mm-hmm. They were going to have some brown-skinned person, and the people were going to pick them out of a lineup or something crazy like that.
Well, at NYU, apparently they tried to avoid that racism tag.
Right. I actually read an article about
it
was slightly different.
The individual who was Waldo and had to be found was wearing a sign that says, "I'm an illegal immigrant," and apparently was Caucasian.
Right.
But that doesn't really...
It doesn't
erase the damage or the intent
that
we can see there. Tristan, thanks for checking in from Lansing. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Nice to talk with you. 888-5-PETER-B. We'll take more of your calls after the break here and all hour long. There's one line open right now, so if you want to share a comment, we want to hear from you. 888-573-8372. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. I've been driving all night, my hands wet on the wheel. It's the Peter B. Collins Show, rock. rocking you homeward this evening. We favor electric guitars and progressive viewpoints. We're in the free speed zone. All our lines are taken down, but when we end a call, you can dial in toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Brian is in New Hampshire, Manchester. Welcome, Brian.
Hi, Peter. You know, as a true progressive, I don't care a bit about the catfight between the two elitist megalomaniacs, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. But about that thing about the catch an immigrant program, why don't we have a catch a fascist brat trust fund receiving son or daughter of some poor profiteer or misery profiteer?
You're on it, Brian. You're on it. That's great.
And talking about the immigration crisis, the phony immigration crisis with Halliburton about to build these concentration camps and get more profit out of that like they are out of the evil war in Iraq.
These are family detention centers.
No,
they're not prisons, Brian.
Yeah, I think that's about the same thing Hitler originally called Dachau as he first opened in 1933. That's what. The fact is, the immigration crisis. I'd like the so-called the mavericks of the airwaves like CNN's Lou Dobbs and that Pat Buchanan lad. They don't stay on the real source of the problem. The corporations, the multinational corporations, that hire hundreds of thousands or more of these illegal workers every year, and these phony militiamen. The real Minutemen came from my part of the country. The real patriots. In the late 18th century. They're not these phony Minutemen, these publicity hounds in their camouflage jammies there on the border there, picking on some poor Mexican peasant, starving, dehydrated peasant, when the real source of the problem is the fact that these corporations, the multinationals, employ these illegal immigrants, and that's the incentive for them to come across the border in the first place. They don't spend daily protesting outside of Archer Daniel Midland Corporation. No, they're too afraid to do that because they know their private security firms will be on them faster than white on rice. Now, I'm sick of this, Peter. It's a phony crisis. Lou Dobbs and Patrick Buchanan are as much mavericks as an armadillo. Armadillo is a reptile. I thought it was a reptile. You know that's what the armadillo. I'm thinking that what we really need is to have George Bush impeached and go back to him and Barney Bush playing with the armadillos at his ranch in Crawford, Texas.
Hey, Brian.
What?
You're really on it today.
Okay, and thanks. I just wanted to say, you know, the armadillo was also called a Panzerschwag by the German POWs in Texas in World War II. It means
all right,
armored pig.
That's more than I need to know, but
and
Brian,
also one
Brian,
thing, and then,
Brian.
And you're free of me. The misery's over, lad. They were also called Hoover hogs in the Depression era because people couldn't afford even a chicken in every pot that Republican president, President Hoover, promised.
Hey, Brian.
Thank you, sir.
You're ready. You need your own talk show.
Okay.
Go for it, Kate.
Sign me up.
Thanks for your call.
All right.
Always a pleasure. Roman and Mesa, you're next. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
Listen, I just wanted to tell you, I really don't care about what's going on between the two media candidates in the Democratic Party. However, one of the things that does concern me is that all of the Democratic candidates were in Carson City except Barack Obama. And, you know, if you can't be there for a union event, that creates some concern for me.
Really?
I
don't think that was a command performance. I don't see the significance of that, and I don't believe Obama consciously chose not to be there. I think he had other plans that day. I haven't seen his itinerary, so I'm only speculating. But I really don't think that his absence is a big issue. This is way early in the campaign, and the people who showed up there were vying for television time because most of them, besides Hillary, can't get it.
You mean besides Hillary or Barack? They both get it.
Yeah.
And they're both corporate candidates, and they're both media candidates. The real working people had their candidates there. So as a labor leader, I definitely take issue with your perception of it because, to me, the people who come to the working people are the people who ought to lead this country.
Well, Brian, Roman, if this were next year and the campaign was in full force, I could see your remark. But, you know, these are preliminaries. We haven't even had spring training yet. And to see the hardball tactics being used by the Clinton campaign, and I take your point that Obama is a media darling, but I think he's more than that, and I don't think he's nearly as captive to corporate interests as Senator Clinton is, or Senator Edwards for that matter. So
yep.
I think that, people are hardening their positions very early here, and many of those 10 or 11 people who were on the stage yesterday won't be around next year for the primaries.
But, Peter, See, I look at it this way. If McCain will go to Roberts University because that's the group he wants to attract, then Obama should have came to labor.
Okay, but again, it is so early in the process that I think you're making a big deal out of a very minor event.
Okay.
So, let's talk again. Thank you, Roman. Next, we go to Leonard in Glendale. Hello, Leonard. You're on the air today.
Hey, Peter. Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's early in the game, but I'm always concerned too, you know, when these people, because I'm strong, you know, on the unions. My father was a union member for 50 years, and all that. But getting off of that, basically, I just wanted to say, I just want to call up and say thanks, because when you take people's calls, you know, it's just so nice to hear somebody who's not constantly attacking people calling in. I mean, you may tear them apart with your reasoning. Another thing that, you know, but the thing is, that's a really refreshing thing to hear. But I'm very troubled now because I do believe this nation, and I don't want to use scare tactics. I don't believe in violence, except in self-defense. But I believe this nation is getting nearer and nearer, very close to a revolution. A lot of people are saying, no duh, Leonard. But I'm telling you right now, if all these cases going up to the Supreme Court, these people do what Bush wants them to do, and they don't follow their oaths, you know, as judicial members, they're asking for a revolution. That's not coming from me. I'm just saying you can see the signs right now.
Well, there are many people who acknowledge your point that this president is brooking a constitutional crisis, and I think
right.
It may come very soon. I'm quite concerned about it. There's a possibility of martial law. Nationalization of the federalization of the National Guard, and now Joe Lieberman says that he might exit the Democratic Party and throw the Senate to the Republicans. These are difficult times. Thanks for your call, Leonard. The Peter B. Collins Show. We're in the free speech zone. There are a couple of lines open if you'd like to join this conversation. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. And during that day-long commercial break, I know you're glad it's over, so am I. Matt Renner, our able producer, pointed out to me that say what you will about Barack Obama and the fact that he wasn't in Carson City at the labor confab, kind of a beauty parade yesterday, but he has so far decided to freeze out Fox News. He won't talk to their reporters. He has decided that after this phony madrasa story surfaced and was hyped and amped up by Fox News Channel, that he's just not going to deal with them. I think that's really refreshing. Make them work for it. Well, one of the more disturbing items that came in my email today was forwarded by Margaret, one of our internet listeners in Louisville, Kentucky. Thank you, Margaret. And this is attributed to the new publication called The Politico. And they're on the web at politico.com. They publish a broadsheet, a hard copy of a newspaper in Washington every day. And this is an upstart, a startup, probably both of those. Anyway, they write, Senator Joseph Lieberman of Connecticut told the Politico Thursday that he has no immediate plans to switch parties, but suggested that Democratic opposition to funding the war in Iraq might change his mind. Now, I both respect and resent the pivotal position occupied by this former Democrat. And, of course, I'm deeply opposed to the positions Lieberman has taken, particularly regarding the Bush administration and the war in Iraq. But for him to use this threat at such a crucial time when this war is, you know, falling apart and Americans have gotten wind of it, and he's essentially running cover for the corrupt Bush administration and their amoral war. Yet, this also explains the problem that Harry Reid has confronted and why he had to be a little delicate in trying to push through the anti-surge resolution. Got 56 votes, but not Joe Lieberman's. And if Lieberman, you know, caucuses with the Republicans, it throws control of the Senate to them. It blocks any future non-binding resolutions. It makes it that much more difficult to find the votes to end debate, to attach restrictions to future funding for Iraq. It makes it that much more difficult to change the Military Commissions Act and end our flirtation with torture and other illegal atrocities. And it's painful to say this, but Joe Lieberman is in the driver's seat. Oh, boy. And he'll drive us right off a cliff and tell us how great he is. Deborah in Phoenix, thanks for holding. You're next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Peter B.
Hi, Deborah.
But isn't it his vote that ultimately matters, not so much his political affiliation?
No, because if he caucuses with the Republicans, they take control of the Senate, they chair the committees, they set the agenda, and it would be a very serious setback to the minor gains that Democrats achieved in last November's elections.
What a rat. Anyway, I really liked that piece you read earlier. That was funny about Hillary.
Newsforreal.com. Go check it out. It's a very powerful essay.
And I'm afraid my instincts about her were right. She just is too calculating. She was silent too long. When you compare her to a Russ Feingold, I mean, there is no comparison.
Yeah.
And
or
if she
even,
were a leader, she would have spoken up on so many important issues long ago.
Deborah, let's be generous. Let's compare her to a moderate Democrat, like John Edwards.
Yeah.
A guy who has said clearly, I was wrong, I regret my vote. And
right.
She was in the same boat with him in October of 2002. He, of course, was angling to run for president at that time, and one could say that his vote was even more calculating than hers at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a while back, and I'm willing to let bygones be bygones if people learn from those mistakes. And Edwards is clearly repentant and wants to make amends for what he did. She is not, and she's trying to camouflage her previous failures by positioning herself as the one who really wants to get the troops out now. And, of course, she didn't support Feingold's censure of Bush over the NSA spying program. She didn't support John Kerry's relatively courageous stand last June and July when he introduced legislation to withdraw American troops by a date certain. She's really late to this party, and she's trying to act like she's the one who sent out the invitations.
Yeah, I know. She lost me a while ago. What are Edwards' corporate connections?
Well, he's a trial lawyer, and he came out of the kind of conservative, pro-corporate part of the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
He has articulated, starting with his Two Americas spiel in 2004, and buttressed with his work on behalf of poor Americans since then. I think he has worked hard to offset that.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a real liberal, in my view. He is a populist who has a focus on issues related to working families and poverty in this country. And I could support him. I have reservations, though, because he didn't carry a single state for the Kerry Edwards ticket in 2004. And it was thought that because he's a Southerner and an attractive younger candidate, that he was going to be able to make some inroads there. So he's got to prove to me, through the primary process, that those factors no longer apply. He's got to show us that he can win some southern states, and he has to show that he can broaden his appeal beyond the pretty boy who talks about two Americas.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Good to hear from you. Next to Barbara in Cave Creek. Hello, Barbara.
Hi again. I just think that I'm not a Hillary fan, and I'm not an Obama fan,
mm-hmm.
but I think that, and I'm really not a Geffen fan, and I know from Once I Speak, and I think they started with the bashing, and she reacted with Moore's bashing, and I think that they really... I don't think they're calculating quite correctly in strategizing in that way and starting this early to be so openly, publicly supporting Obama when nobody else has even gotten a chance. And I just cannot stand those people, and I didn't see them support in any way, shape, or form Gore or Kerry, and I think they're disgusting. And
Wait. You're starting to talk the way the right does with these sweeping terms about the left. So define who you're talking about. You don't like David Geffen.
The Hollywood crew.
So you don't like anybody in Hollywood. Do you want them to stop writing
Spielberg
picks?
And that DreamWorks group who put on the fundraiser.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they put on a fundraiser and then, I mean, it's fine, raise money for who you want, but they make a big deal out of it by putting on some Hollywood fundraiser, which they know is going to get publicity, and then they bash.
Wait a minute. Not they. He. David Geffen, as an individual, gave an interview to Maureen Dowd, and he unloaded. He offered his unvarnished view of the Clintons, and he's clearly bitter, and I don't know exactly why. And, I don't think that his comments are that significant. I think that Hillary's reaction to them and her campaign's reaction are very significant. They treated this like a Bill Clinton bimbo eruption, like Jennifer Flowers just appeared and said she slept with Hillary. And
well, maybe he slept with David Geffen. I don't know.
to be honest here, David Geffen once gave an interview after he acknowledged his homosexuality and said, gosh, in Hollywood, maybe he said he was bisexual at one point, and he said, it gives me twice as many opportunities on a Saturday night.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah. So I have no real love for David Geffen. He's produced some great records and a few good movies. And again, my point is here the reaction of the Clinton campaign. And I'm interested in Obama, but it's not like I'm ready to write him checks or endorse him. I like him because he's not Hillary.
Yeah, but I cannot. Okay, well, that's fine if you don't like Hillary, but I'm not. They're both from Illinois, and I don't particularly. And that's where I'm originally from.
Yeah.
And I don't particularly care for either of them, and I don't think he has enough experience, and I think for him to allow those comments to go on, and he knows that they're making these comments on his behalf and that they're raising money on his behalf. It is a slap in the face to Hillary, but it's a little too early to start this, and the Republicans are jumping for joy.
Now that's a more serious comment, Barbara, and I'm glad you made it. This is one of the things I'm very concerned about, is we have a lot of dissension in the progressive ranks. Air America attacked Ed Schultz, and Ed Schultz returned fire. There is dissension in the 9/11 truth movement. There's dissension in the voting integrity movement. And now we see, way early in the cycle, these candidates sniping at one another. And this really portends quite badly for Democratic fortunes in 2008 and holding on to this flimsy majority we have as we see the risk that Joe Lieberman poses right now.
Exactly.
And I think it's really important for progressives, including Democrats. You know, not all progressives are Democrats,
right.
And I'm one of those people. But I think it's important for those of us on the left to pick our battles.
Right.
And be very careful when we shoot our little pistols into the air, because we really don't know where those rounds are going to land how they're going to be used. Barbara, as you very appropriately pointed out, we are creating ammunition for the right to use on whoever survives this grueling process.
Right. That's exactly.
Let's go back to Willie Horton. The first Willie Horton commercial was produced by Al Gore against Michael Dukakis in the primary in 1988. And what was his name? The Republican...
Dukakis.
No, the Republican campaign consultant, Lee Atwater.
Oh, right.
Lee Atwater.
He's on his deathbed for supporting Bush.
Yeah, but Lee Atwater took a look at what the Democrats used to slime each other that year and said, wow, this will work for Bush.
Right.
And it was one of the most effective pieces, and we need to guard against that. It's not like I want the candidates to all just sit politely and say, I'm for peace, love, and our children. But I do want them to avoid these kinds of broadsides. And, I think that David Geffen went too far, but I think that the Clinton campaign really overreacted.
Well, yes, I agree with you, but they didn't shoot the first shot, and it was shot by Geffen, and I just think people should be aware of, you know, who's shooting. and also the fact that Barack really should be distancing himself, whether he's, you know, he needs the money. Everybody needs the money. And, you know, he's going to Hollywood for the money, but he really should be careful about who's speaking, you know, on his behalf or perceived to be speaking on his behalf.
Well, that's where the Clinton campaign, again, tried to reframe this. Geffen spoke as an individual. If you read Maureen Dowd's piece, he's not presented as a spokesperson or a mouthpiece for Obama.
Simply, it doesn't matter. I mean, Obama should be very, you know, calling Maureen Dowd and saying, excuse me, but that's not me.
I don't agree with you, Barbara. I don't think Obama has any responsibility to rein in anybody who speaks, you know, against the Clintons and who happens to be supporting him right now.
Okay, well, that's probably true, but, you know, they really should be careful. You know, it's like, that's great you're supporting me. Do me a favor and let me know what you're going to say on my behalf before you say it.
Gotcha. All right, Barbara, sorry you don't like those candidates from the land of Blinken.
Sorry. I'm a Stevenson girl.
Great to hear from you. More of your calls coming up next. Grab a line, and if there's a Hillary supporter out there, we'll take your call first. 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. We're in the home stretch here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You've got the Peter B. Collins Show. Among our guests tomorrow, Ken Silverstein, the Washington editor of Harper's Magazine, talks about Islamic groups that support democracy. How about that? And some other news from inside the Beltway. Also, Brad Friedman will be with us as usual from bradblog.com. That's tomorrow. And we're going to shuffle the order of the callers on the board right now because some people have said, yeah, I support Hillary. Let's go to Joel in Forest Hills, New York. Hi, Joel.
Hi. I listen to you because the Air America, I can't get in well here in New York. The spokesman for Obama, Robert Gibbs, is the guy who did the first bad commercials against Howard Dean. So neither Obama nor Hillary are have behind the scenes gentle spirits working for them. I just would wish that when they get upset in terms of campaigning, that they also do that, but behind the scenes.
You're right.
I mean, look how Kerry, trying to be a gentleman in dealing with the Swift boat, how he ended up losing the election. And keep in mind that I certainly think there is a vast right-wing conspiracy. I mean, I'm in a labor union, and I see business news an hour every day on PBS,
right,
a half hour every day on NPR. I've yet to hear of a regular nationally broadcast show about labor unions 15 minutes every 3 months.
Yeah. Well, there used to be a labor reporter at every major newspaper in America.
That's how Murray Kempton began in the 1940s.
And
subsequently here to New York.
Now, Joel, let me ask you this, and it was interesting because to his credit, Chris Matthews tried really hard to get Howard Wolfson to respond to this last night, and he just wouldn't. And it appears that because what Geffen talked about reflected on Bill Clinton's personal problems, the Lewinsky case and the impeachment, that deeply offended the Clintons, and also the allegation from David Geffen that they lie. And they responded in a way that, you know, to me is political hardball, and that really will not advance their case. And it also suggests to me that by going ballistic so early in the campaign about things that are clearly out there, okay, I mean, the Lewinsky case is going to crop up no matter who Hillary runs against, whether it's in the primary or she makes it to the general election. And she's got to come up with a better way of dealing with that, because to simply try to silence people or to, you know, stare them into submission is not going to work.
I agree that they should try to manage to handle it in a better fashion. I think that in terms of how Hillary and Bill were treated while they were in the White House by the right and by an awful lot of people who would assert that they are actually liberal or towards left, but bent over backwards, as the New York Times and the Washington Post did repeatedly at the beginning of Watergate, and as Maureen Dowd continues to do, they have a strong urge to respond, and this in the Clinton campaign, I'm sure, to respond with overwhelming force, because
it's going to backfire.
They get assured that if they get things from the Republicans, that the Republicans will know that if they try these tricks against her, seeing how she treats her fellow Democrats, they'll even be rougher with the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
The
All
problem right. is the potential negative feedback from Democratic voters and from the general population and from voters at large, the whole voting population who view, are of the view that Hillary, as the comments that were of Geffen that Maureen Dowd featured in the article.
Gotcha. Joel, I want to jump to another call. Thank you. Beth in Phoenix, you're next. Go ahead.
Hi. I want to just say something and have you just listen instead of, like, interrupt me or something, okay?
Well, it's my show, so I'll do what I want, but go ahead and talk.
Yeah, I know, but it's also our show if we're all supporting the
well,
state.
Well, just stop kibitzing. Tell me what you want to say.
Well, okay, well, you say it's no big deal to call someone a liar, which is a problem for me, you know, because you support his calling her a liar, but not her response to it, and that makes my bullshit detectors go up. It's
well,
like,
first of all, you're not allowed to say that on the air. Okay, you got to clean up your language. Secondly, it's out there. Okay,
I heard you say the DAMN word earlier.
We're allowed to say that, but there's a whole list the FCC has. So just play with me, will you? The issue is that the honesty of the Clintons is out there. Bill Clinton lied to the grand jury. That is a fact.
No, we're talking about a Democratic Party that needs to get in power here, and we're talking about now getting into, like, mudslinging amongst the party. Come on. I mean, that doesn't mean that because this was all brought up that it was proved that they're liars, you know? What I saw happen as that whole drama unfolded was somebody who was basically put into a box by his own fault, really, but somebody who was a prey to the Republican Party, who if anybody was going to slip, they were going to find out about it.
Well, wait a minute. That's this victimology. The Clintons are not victims, okay? Bill Clinton's not a victim. Hillary Clinton is not a victim.
You're making judgments that have never been proven. That's why I'm saying this is almost like calling into talk radio. I was talking to somebody.
This is talk radio.
I was talking to somebody the other day. I was talking to somebody the other day that said, oh, yeah, Bill and Hillary killed Steve, you know, the foster guy. I'm like going, no, I can't believe anybody even thinks that. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, I wonder how much of this is because she's
a
woman.
I'm not talking about Vince Foster. I didn't bring that up. I am talking about the clear lie that Bill Clinton told to the grand jury, and I'm talking about the far-fetched response that Hillary claimed that she only learned about Bill's dalliance the night before he went to the grand jury when everybody in America knew what had happened.
No, these things were never proven, and it does seem because of your defensiveness like I'm talking to right-wing radio. That's what's really weird about this. Like, I've been listening to right-wing radio for the last... Because you're solidified for Obama, and it's obvious.
No, I'm not. I am not in favor of Hillary Clinton.
Because after listening to you talk, it's like, that's what I hear.
Well, then...
what are you doing? You're defending them all the time, and you're not paying attention that... You know, we've got to work together as a party. We can't have...
Working together as a party does not mean protecting Hillary Rodham Clinton from the truth. I'm sorry. I won't do that. And I won't protect Barack Obama from the truth either. I call him as I see him. Thanks for all of your calls today. It's been a fascinating show. Let's do it again tomorrow.
Trails to you until we meet again.